to Canucks Central at noon.
Now works into the high slot and shoots. He scores. Quinn Hughes in overtime. And he's the leading rookie scorer in the NHL.
Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Here's Horvat with a partial break down the left wing. Bo Horvat, Ainsley, he scores. The captain does it again.
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
What is up? Welcome to Canucks Central. It is Vic Star and Jamie Dodd on, and I can't believe we're even going to say this. Game day. On game day. Yeah, we made it. It is the start of the NHL season. Your Vancouver Canucks will be opening up their season on the road versus the Edmonton Oilers. Lots to get into, Jamie, but hey, we made it.
We're here, man. It's finally here. We compared it to like a second Christmas yesterday. It feels a little bit like that. We are, 7 hours away now from puck drop against the Oilers. I mean, only 2.5 hours from the NHL as a whole getting going. Cannot wait.
And 5 hours away till the start of the pregame show, which you will hear here on your home of the Canucks. Andrew Walker and Satyar Shah will have it for you. Patrick Johnson will join at 5 o'clock. Batch and Hershey at the top of the hour at 6. And then, puck drop at 7 o'clock. It's going to be a blast. Cannot wait. The Landover pregame show 5 hours away for the start of the NHL season. Let's catch you up on the things you need to know for heading into tonight's game. So JT Miller, an evolving story yesterday, obviously not on the ice, and then we learn it's due to COVID protocols. Now we're aware of the living situation with he and Jordy Benn, and it's a lot of people had some questions. Now I'm not 100% convinced we have the final answer just yet. The NHL will make an announcement in regards to this, but you start to see some details emerge of the protocols that they're going to have to face. Obviously, you're going to have to go into a bit of an incubation period now, dealing with NHL regulations and then provincial regulations and following those protocols. What is the timeline that those guys are out? For now, let's just safely assume the next 4 games they're out.
That is a very, very safe assumption. I mean, really, it's a guarantee because there's no way for them to travel to Alberta from Vancouver within the rules that the NHL has laid out. So at a bare minimum, yes, they are 100% out for these first 4 games. And then we should direct, you know, you mentioned Patrick Johnson will be on the pregame show with Sat and Walker at 5. And PJ had a great thread on Twitter earlier this morning trying to basically lay out what he thinks the situation is. And I won't get into all of it. It is, you know, no surprise. It's a bit hard to follow because it involves, you know, the interaction of the NHL rules and BC's rules and all of that. But the upshot is, you know, we could be looking at 10 to 14 days of self-isolation for either or both of Jordy Benn and JT Miller.
So that's the status as it stands. And it's an important loss, right? I want to talk about the hockey aspect of it because we're going to be dealing with a lot of COVID throughout the course of the season. Don't necessarily want to start today off with dealing with just that. But I was thinking about, okay, JT Miller's out. And when we talk about, you know, importance to team, Pedersen and Hughes are the guys that get a lot of the credit, and it's like, oh, you can't deal with that. And I want to excuse the goalies from this conversation because obviously we know the importance of goaltending in general. Just is JT Miller the third hardest Canuck to replace in the lineup?
After Hughes and Pedersen? Yes, he is. You could make a case for Bo Horvat just because of what that would mean at the center position and who you're bringing up into the second line center role. But, you know, theoretically, if JT Miller was healthy and Bo Horvat was out, you could slot Miller in as the second line center without too much of a drop off there. So I'd say he is the third most important player or the third hardest to replace player on this team.
Yeah, it's not even just the tactical side of it, right? Of how with the roster makeup, it's like there's such an emotional pull as well with JT Miller, right? He's kind of the beating heart of the team at times. As much as the team will go as far as Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes want to take them, as far as emotional leaders and as far as talismans go, He's kind of that. And we saw how he took guys under his wing last year. We saw in moments, you know, he was the one that was speaking out to the media to say, you know, that team's not as good and we can show that we can be a lot better. He was the vocal presence for both inside the room and just on the bench. And I think from that element, that is a massive loss. Forgetting the on-ice production, which he was fantastic at last year, obviously, and he's such a well-rounded player. The absence of his overall presence to me is a bigger loss than everything else.
And I think you just look at the way the Canucks had success last year. It was the Lotto line dominating at even strength and winning that their minutes decisively night in, night out, and special teams. And, you know, JT Miller is a huge part of both of those sides of the equation, right? If JT Miller is not the left winger on the Lotto line, how much does that impact their ability to drive play, their ability to produce at 5-on-5, and then how much does his absence impact the power play? You know, on the power play, I think they can withstand losing JT Miller, certainly in the short term. You wouldn't want it to be a long-term thing, but the 5-on-5 impact with that top line is what I'm going to be paying close attention to tonight, because they need their top line to be elite, right? To have success, because, you know, this is a team that there are still questions about the depth further down the lineup. You're not in a situation where you want to be rolling four lines and you can't count on offensive contributions necessarily from your bottom six night in, night out. So you need your top six and your top line to be really, really good. And look, of course, with Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser on a line, you can still have fantastic results out of that group, but it's harder to do without a doubt because of JT Miller's absence.
It's more so like the cascading effect of it all, right? Like Brock Besser, we talked about his improved defensive play. He's not quite to the level of JT Miller, but you know, in a two-game sample, yeah, he can probably make up the difference. It's a gap between someone like Brock defensively and someone like Jake defensively, right? Who's going to feature on that line. We expect to, at least. Travis Green was rather coy and rather prickly with media. And, you know, as Randeep likes to say, Travis tight lips, not giving up the goalie details and not really confirming who's playing on what line. Although, just going off of yesterday's practice, you can kind of glean what you may. But, like, that's where the impact is felt. It's not necessarily who replaces JT Miller. It's who replaces the cascading series of events.
And we should mention, you know, the assumption is that Jake Virtanen will at least start on the top line in place of JT Miller. That's how they skated yesterday at practice. As you said, Travis Green, he wouldn't confirm that. But what he did say is, look, whoever starts on that line, it doesn't mean they're going to play there every shift. And so you should expect to see a kind of rotating cast of wingers alongside Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser. And who knows? I mean, if the team's losing in the second period, all of the lines could get put in the blender. But this strikes me as a situation where, yeah, Jake Virtanen will probably start with Pettersson and Besser. But as the game goes on, as Travis Green gets a better sense of the chemistry, and depending on the game situation too, you're going to see different guys rotate through that spot, right? If the Canucks need to protect a lead, you know, maybe Tyler Motte gets to go out there and take some minutes with Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser. If they're chasing the game, you'll probably see more of Jake Virtanen. So it's going to depend on the situation. It's going to depend on how Virtanen performs in this opportunity. But right now, and I know we're getting some questions about who's going to skate there in our text message inbox, 650-650, the Dunbar text line. Dunbar Lumber text line. I would expect it to be Jake Virtanen to start, but no confirmation yet.
I want to play this clip from Travis Green, who did meet with media earlier today, and there's a couple of good texts coming in from Ben from Kitts. I'll get to it in a second, Ben, but I do want to play this from Travis Green because these things are kind of linked, and I think the way Travis addresses this, it's coach speak to some degree, but it does speak to the language and sometimes the way Travis Green, I think, processes these moments. Here's Travis Green talking about JT Miller's absence.
Yeah, he's a big hole. You know, it's no secret what he means to our group. It's not something that we're going to talk about or dwell on. Hopefully he's back as soon as he can. And but when someone goes out of the lineup, it's opportunity for someone else. And we're confident in our group.
So again, that's by and large coach speak, right? It's an opportunity for someone else. But Ben from Kits makes a good point here. It is an opportunity, and I'm going to be really interested to see if Jake Kent sees the opportunity playing these first few games with Pettersson and Besser. This could be really telling in how much work this offseason pays off for his growth and the team as a whole. That's from Ben and Kits of the 650 Dunbar Lumber text line. And yeah, it's you never want to get your opportunity because of injury, but guess what? Like, you're getting an opportunity. And this isn't a referendum of, oh, you got to perform in these four games and otherwise you're never going to get a shot again. But when you get an opportunity, you're expected to perform. That's a conversation we've had with Nils Höglander. It's one thing to make the team, but now you're playing in a top six role. You've got to play well. The NHL is not a developmental league. And especially when you're playing in prominent minutes as far as where you are in the lineup. So it's an opportunity. There's an expectation for him to score, obviously. It doesn't make or break his season, but this is a cool opportunity for Jake to start his season off well.
Yeah, look, next man up, you're right, it's coach speak, but that doesn't mean it's not true. And this is, it's exactly as the texter said, as Travis Green said, it's a chance for somebody else on the team to impress the coaching staff and to increase their role. And with Jake Virtanen, I mean, it's kind of, you know, a second lease on a chance this season, because all of the chatter coming into training camp, of course, was, okay, will Jake Virtanen finally get his moment in the top six, you know, because there was that open spot. Then Nils Höglander ends up earning it in training camp. So this is an unexpected, but huge, huge chance for Jake Virtanen. You know, he was probably disappointed that early in training camp, it looked like he wouldn't get that opportunity in the top six. Well, now here it is, and arguably an even better one, because you're playing alongside Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser. You're playing on a line that is first and foremost tasked with producing, with putting up goals on the scoreboard. This is a golden opportunity, and you're right. It's not as if, you know, in these first three or four games, if Jake Virtanen has, you know, one assist and that's all he has to show for it, that doesn't mean it's a failure. That doesn't mean that, you know, Jake will never get that shot again, but this might be the best opportunity he gets all year to show that he deserves more minutes in a top six role.
Yeah, he doesn't have to start the season trying to climb uphill, right? He gets to kind of start 75% of the way there, and if it shows up and he performs well, you know, that's a good way to start the season, and it's a reminder. It's like, hey, he's not competing against JT Miller, but he's competing against Nils Höglander.
Yep.
If he slips at all. And I'm curious if one of the reasons Höglander's ascension into the lineup and where he stands in the lineup is due to, like, he's got ready-made legs, right? He's been playing. If in the short sprint of a season, whatever edge you might have, if just pumping him into the top six right now while everyone's catching up with their own sea legs and he's got an extra little bit of jump and an extra little burst, can you maximize this minor edge that you have? And maybe there's a bit of a boost there. Now, as the season goes on, by game 12, does someone like Virtanen kind of slide back into that second line role and Höglander fades? But if Höglander performs, obviously there's a lot of staying power there. We'll get to more thoughts as well. I also want to hear on the 650 Dunbar Lumber text line, like, what are you excited for tonight? Like, what are you excited to see? I know people are just going to say, oh, Pettersson and Hughes and all that. Okay, that's well and good. But, like, what else are you excited to see? So jump into our text inbox, 650-650 on a Canucks game day. Pregame show starting at 5 o'clock on the home of the Canucks. Other final roster details. The Canucks did officially announce their final roster. And a couple of surprises, especially considering Jim Benning was on Airways last night and saying, yeah, Louis Erickson's on the taxi squad, and here he is today on the main roster. Obviously, part and parcel due to JT Miller and Jace Hauerluck, but official to start the season, Louis Erickson begins it on the main roster.
It's so funny, too, and we got this text in from Leaf Hater Steve. He says, hey, I saw a parade downtown. Does that mean Erickson was sent down today? Nope. He is still not just on the taxi squad, not just skating with the team. He is on the active roster, will almost certainly be a healthy scratch tonight, but still just a couple days after going on waivers and everyone was so excited. Oh, it's the end of the Louis Erickson era. Thank goodness we don't have to watch him anymore. And 2 days later, here he is. Nope, I'm still alive. I'm still in the NHL. I'm still on the active roster. And look, as you said, Bick, it is just because of the unavailability of JT Miller because of COVID. That's why he gets the reprieve. But yeah, Louis Erickson, you can't kill him, man. You cannot get rid of him. He is still here.
It feels like that, like, reverse of, like, The Godfather. It's like every time they send me out, they pull me back in, and he gets his way onto the main roster. So, yeah, he's on the main roster. Your taxi squad officially is Bailey, Brisebois, DiPietro, Michaelis, Rafferty, and Rathbone, which is an interesting mixture of young and, I guess, competitive guys who can fill in Michaelis, Bailey, and Brisebois, right? It's a decent mixture of, hey, if there's a scenario where we can keep developing a handful of guys, but if we take some injuries, we have some guys that can step in to play minor roles.
And you can kind of also, you know, that's what the taxi squad looks like right now. It's probably not what the taxi squad is going to look like in a month, right? Because, you know, if JT Miller's back, that bumps Louis Erickson down to the taxi squad. Jalen Chatfield was on the active roster, but when Jordy Benn gets healthy, you know, you think that's maybe a place where he would be demoted to the taxi squad. And then with Mikey DiPietro and Jack Rathbone specifically, that strikes me as we're going to, you know, AHL training camp hasn't started yet. Rather than have those guys sitting on their hands, we're going to keep them around practicing with the team. And then when the AHL does get going, you know, as I just said, the Canucks have to clear a little bit of space for some extra bodies on the taxi squad anyways. So, you know, the inclusion of Jack Rathbone, I think, will make some people curious. Is he going to be here all year? Right now, I would wager that he's going to be here kind of temporarily before ultimately making his way to Utica.
Yeah, certainly some benefits for the Vancouver Canucks as far as the way the season shapes up with the AHL not getting going, and the guys can hang around till the 20th. So they get a bit of a luck of the draw in that sense. Obviously, you'd rather prefer to start the season with JT Miller and whatnot, but given the circumstances, it did kind of they weren't left in a necessarily high leverage, precarious position because they were able to do this still. One other thing I want to touch on, but we will preview tonight's game as well. Do it in the back end. Keep your texts coming in or what you're excited for. We'll get to them in the back end of the show here, or after the break, rather. Because on Sportsnet.ca, they wrote today, like, the X factors for the seven Canadian teams. And I just want to get your thoughts on this, because it's weird to me, because we've spent so much time talking about the goaltending, and they highlighted Thatcher Demko and Brayden Holtby as X factors. But I kind of felt like that's kind of a cop-out to just say, oh, goaltending is going to be an X factor. It's like, well, goaltending is important to every team. Is that necessarily an X factor? If it's bad, obviously, there aren't a lot of teams that can overcome bad goaltending. You got to have a hilariously good roster, maybe like a Colorado level roster. Who outside of goaltending, and if you want to pick goaltending, look, that's fine, that's a simple pick, I get it, but outside of the goaltending, who are potential X factors for you?
I feel like you're pulling a James Harden here, just coming out and shredding the Sportsnet.ca team. What are they thinking? Well, picking the goaltending as the X factor for the Canucks. I love it.
I'll admit I was disappointed.
I might be hosting the show by myself tomorrow at this rate.
I just think there's two better candidates. I'll share mine in a second.
All right, here's the thing. I not to be totally middle of the road here, but I do see where both you and Sportsnet itself is coming from here, because yeah, the Canucks goaltending, it's a major question in the sense that there's a wide range of potential outcomes, but that's pretty much true for every goalie outside of a small handful every year, right? Goaltending is inherently volatile in the NHL. So yes, to a certain extent, goaltending is an X factor for every team. I mean, speaking of basic answers, like, Nils Höglander has to be on the list, right? If he is an impact rookie for this team, can play in your top six, can chip in offense, can hold his own as a two-way player, that dramatically changes the outlook for this team based on where we were just a couple of weeks ago when we were wondering and scratching our heads, how on earth are they going to fill that spot in the top six? If Nils Höglander steps right in and is a legitimate top six forward in the NHL, that's huge for this team.
Here's my X factor, and it's a guy who's been much maligned in his 1 year for the Vancouver Canucks. It's Tyler Myers. I'm not convinced we saw the best of Tyler Myers, and I sat here many times last season, I think, and I said, he's been the second best Canucks defenseman so far this year. And I've backed Tyler Myers, and I thought he gets crapped on a lot of times. I've called him the inkblot D-man, where it's like you're going to see what you want to see. If you want to see defensive gaffes, yeah, you're going to see those. If you want to see some slick passing and carrying the puck out of his own zone, yeah, you're going to see that. And he's got a good shot. He's got some offensive instincts. Tyler Myers, to me, I still feel like there's another layer to his game that has not been unveiled to the Vancouver Canucks. And now when you look at this decor that gets a bit more stabilized, Nate Schmidt, and if we see Myers rotate a bit more frequently with Quinn Hughes, I think this, to me, is a guy who could be a big X factor for the Vancouver Canucks. If he plays, like, I see like number three D-man potential, and I advocated for him playing with Hughes as the main pairing and Hamernick on the fourth and on the third pairing. If he plays as a true number three, because you got your number one now in Quinn Hughes, you got a steady, solid, upbeat, awesome number two in Nate Schmidt. If we get a true blue number three performance from Tyler Myers, it just helps everyone kind of slot elsewhere into this lineup. Alex Edler can provide a lot, but at this stage, I would say, like, if he's your number four, you're feeling great. But if he's your number three, it's like, oh, okay, it's a good team. If Tyler Myers steps up and takes another step to his game, it solidifies what we're talking about here as far as the Canucks decor in relation to the rest of the Canadian division. I look at it and I say, that's a guy who's got a little bit more to give, and if they get it, man, that's a huge boon to the Vancouver Canucks.
It's going to be fascinating to see how the ice time shakes down over the course of the season for the Canucks defensemen, right? Because, you know, Quinn Hughes is going to play huge minutes, and therefore you would expect his partner to start the season, Travis Hamonic, will play a chunk of minutes, although they're not going to be, you know, glued together for the entire season, but he's going to get his minutes. And then with Edler and Schmidt as the shutdown pairing, again, to start the season, to start the game tonight, they'll play significant minutes. And for Tyler Myers, you know, it could be a situation this year where his production declines in terms of points and goals and assists, but the results for the team on when he's on the ice are better. You know, if he is playing in a third pairing role, but then gets the opportunity to step up into a bigger role as the situation dictates, that could be a situation for him where, you know, he's being asked to do a little bit less. He's being asked to shoulder less of a load in terms of being a matchup guy, in terms of, you know, going up against other teams' top lines. If his job gets a little bit easier, is playing lighter minutes, you could see better on ice results in terms of, you know, which team has the puck more when Tyler Myers is on the ice. But, you know, you say, can he be their number three defenseman? I mean, I'm just curious to see where he finishes in the minutes pecking order, right? Because it could easily be fifth after Hamonic and Edler. That's one possible way that it shakes out. It could be third as well, but the deployment of all of these defensemen that Travis Green has at his disposal now is going to be really interesting.
I just go back to that Vegas series where there was like this monsoon of Vegas Golden Knight chances, and Tyler Myers comes into the lineup, and it just, everything looked a little bit calmer. They were able to move the puck, and I know they were playing far more defensive, yes. But even despite his ailments in the bubble of being injured, he was still able to just provide a little bit more obvious defensive stability. And despite, you know, not being the hallmark of his game, is if he builds upon that coming into this season, I'm just really excited for what the potential is for his game to now fit in a lineup that now is better suited probably for his skill set. If they intend to play a bit more aggressive, play a bit with a bit more puck possession, so you defend less, Tyler Myers in the red line moving forward and in the offensive end of the ice can be a very exciting player. And that's a guy I'm looking at and think, oh man, if he finally feels comfortable again and fits into his proper role as a true blue second pairing D-man who can kind of be a bit of an offensive catalyst too. I think there's more to see there. And to me, massive X factor. We'll get your thoughts as well coming up. What are you excited for tonight? 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text line. 4.5 hours away till the pregame show. Yeah, it's game day. It's the season opener for your Vancouver Canucks. Mick Nizar, Jamie Dodd here on Canucks Central on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Canucks Central. It is game day, 4.5 hours away from the pregame show, the Land Rover pregame show. Andrew Walker and Stat Shaw will have that at 5 o'clock. Brendan Gatchler and Corey Hirsch with the call at 7 o'clock. And actually, Batch and Hershey will join the pregame show at 6 o'clock with a bit of a mini roundtable with Walks and Sat. And then your Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers get hyped. We asked you what you were excited for. Begin the show here, 650. Brett from Prince George, I'm excited to see Hughes perform, see how he handles all the hype regarding his rankings that the media has put out on him. A lot of pressure for such a young man. Unsigned text, I'm stoked to see Nils Höglander,
A little
Höglander on PP1. I'm not sure if that's supposed to be Nils or what, but I'm here for calling him a little Höglander.
Lil Nils.
Lil Nils. That sounds like a really bad rapper.
It really does.
Mike Reed texting in, excited to see Holpe or Demko tonight to see how they fare against McDavid. And this unsigned text, the drop pass entry. Let's go.
Yeah,
the drop pass entry. You know, the first time, I feel like somebody should keep a counter of that on Twitter. Pre-idea. Just every drop pass, just tweet, drop pass entry, drop pass entry. And we'll see how many we get through 56 games.
I almost feel like we should all take a pledge that, you know, we're so grateful for hockey to be back, and we're gonna try to be aware of that throughout the whole season. And we take the pledge now that we will not complain about the drop pass this year. I just want to see how long as a fan base Canucks Twitter could get through without pulling their hair out about the drop pass.
Look, it's a great point. I'm on board with this. Let's do like a 4-game moratorium on the drop pass.
All right.
Like, let's see if we can get to Wednesday.
Yeah.
With complaining about the drop pass. And here's the thing. And I know Walks.
Yeah, that's good. Take it one step at a time.
Yeah. Like, Walks makes this point a lot. Where it's like, the reason they do the drop pass is because it works. They're not just, hey, let's just try something quirky. I know it looks weird and it's bizarre, but there is a rhyme and reason for why teams all across the league do the drop pass. It's not something that they're trying to. It's not like Mean Girls and Fetch, right? They're not trying to make it happen. It's a thing. It absolutely is a thing.
And literally every team in the NHL does it.
Yes. Another text coming in here. Lil Hoggy. Absolutely. Keep your thoughts coming in. What are you excited for? But let's get set to start previewing this game. As we're talking about Nils Höglander, actually, Jim Benning joined the program last night with Andrew Walker and Sat Shaw just to talk about, you know, one of the surprises of camp, a guy they've given a chance to, and obviously he's performed really, really well, and we spent a lot of time talking about Höglander. So let's get Jim Benning's thoughts on how he has performed so far through camp.
You know, Höglander's had a really good training camp. He's played with Bo and Pearson. They look good together as a line. Travis has got him on the second power play. So, you know, we're going to see where we're going to give him a chance here, and we're going to see where he's at, and hopefully he can keep playing like he's been playing this last week once we start the games. But if he does take a step back, then we'll have to evaluate where we are and maybe give somebody else a chance internally, or we can always look to the outside. But I'm not really looking to the outside right now, because I like some of our players that, we'll give a chance in that position to before we start looking outside to fill that position.
So a bit of a vote of confidence there from Jim Benning saying, hey, look, it's yours. And we'll certainly have some rotation internally, but, it's tough to make trades as well in this scenario too, right? Because it's the 14-day quarantine and all that if you trade with someone down south. So for now, it's, here's your opportunity. We might rotate, but you certainly might get your opportunity to come back as well.
Yeah, it's and you heard Jim Benning repeatedly last night on the program talk about his confidence in Nils Höglander. And, you know, I think Walker asked him, have you been surprised by how quickly he's stepped up and filled a role for you at training camp? And, you know, Benning said, no, not really. We kind of expected this. So it does lend a little credence to the idea that this is not, you know, a 3 or 4 game tryout for Nils Höglander. Obviously, there has to be a certain level of production and a certain level of competence for him to keep his spot in the lineup. But look, at a certain point, you just got to trust, take the Canucks at face value here, right? Everything they say is how much they like Höglander, how much they think he can contribute. And it sounds like he's going to get a healthy opportunity to show that they're right about him.
And what's funny too is, and Travis Green was asked about it today as well, just the expectations for these types of players, right? Because you've seen this assembly line of rookies that walk straight towards the NHL awards and Ralph Calder trophies. What are the expectations here? And Travis Green just did talk about these young players and Yo Levy and Höglander just tempering expectations and, you know, more coach speak, so to speak. Here's Travis Green talking about the young players tonight.
Come through here the last few years and I'm not comparing. I don't compare any of them at all. I don't compare Besser to Petey or Petey to Huggy, and I'm not going to do that with these two young guys that are going to get to play their first game tonight. Each player is his own player. He's his own man. I do try to taper expectations. I think the biggest thing for me is go out and have fun and play your best game, play with energy, play with passion, and we'll figure out the rest as we go. We don't have to worry about anything other than how they look tonight, how they play tonight. And for us, we don't want to put extra pressure on these young guys. Just play your best hockey and everything else we'll worry about will take care of itself.
In a matchup versus the Oilers, I think between the two, like Yo Levy to me is more vulnerable to having a bad performance. Whereas there's more opportunity, I would say, for someone like Nils Höglander to thrive.
Well, and it's way harder to keep a defenseman who's not quite up to snuff, who's a bit of a liability. It's way harder to keep them in the lineup than it is a forward, right? You know, with Nils Höglander, if he gets a few details wrong in his first couple of games, you can kind of have a little bit of patience. Yes, you need to hit the ground running, but at the same time, you recognize that it's a big jump for him and you're hoping that he can figure it out and give you some offense along the way. You know, if Olli Levy is struggling in his own zone, if he's struggling to pick up your systems and he's struggling with the details, I mean, he's just not offering you anything. And you just can't have a defenseman in your lineup for whom that's the case, especially not one that you're probably going to rely on to kill penalties for you. So yeah, Olli Levy doesn't need to have an impact game tonight or anything like that. Obviously doesn't have to put up points, but he's got to look the part. He can't look out of place early. That would be a major problem.
And the reason I say obviously more vulnerable, it's there might be a scenario where he's on the ice at the same time as Connor McDavid. And one of the things that we've talked about with Olli Levy is, okay, what's the mobility level at, right? It's yeah, you're getting stronger and yeah, you're recovering from a host of injuries, but there's still a baseline of mobility that you're required for the NHL. And if he gets put out there with someone like McDavid or Draisaitl or Yamamoto, guys who can really fly, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, there's an element to this where you can get exposed a little, but obviously, you know, you sheltered a bit and you hope you survive. Nils Höglander, though, in this scenario, you might get minutes out there versus Tyson Barrie and Caleb Jones and Slater Cook, and those are goal scoring opportunities. The Oilers have their flaws, and their flaws can be exposed in the defensive end. So a guy like Höglander might get his opportunities to jump onto the box score tonight as far as generating points, which would be really, really exciting. Let's get to the rest of the matchup too. Where do you tonight look at and say, this is where it's won and lost? Is it simply Stars versus Stars, McDavid versus Pedersen, and who outperforms who is how we view this of who comes out on top?
Let's put it this way. It's hard to see the Canucks winning unless Elias Pettersson outplays Connor McDavid, right? Or at least plays him to a draw. Because, you know, as you said, farther down the Edmonton lineup, in their defense pairings, in their bottom six, there are players that the Canucks can exploit, but you know, I'm sure Edmonton and Edmonton fans are looking and saying the same thing about the Canucks bottom six, right? So yeah, you need, and look, we've had this conversation a lot about where Elias Pettersson ranks, you know, in the NHL as a whole, in the Canadian division. Well, here is a golden opportunity. Night one of the season, all eyes in Canada will be on this game. Show that you deserve to be in the conversation with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Go out there and win the game over them, right? Perform better than them. Show that you are a peer of these superstar players. Look, it's not the only way that the Canucks can win, but it becomes really, really difficult if that's not the case.
The Oilers are kind of fascinating, too, because we were talking about Montreal yesterday, and it's like, they have, to me, they have three second lines. I look at the Oilers, though, and what's fascinating about them is they kind of have two first lines. McDavid, Draisaitl anchoring these units, Yamamoto, Nugent Hopkins are going to be on those units, so that's fantastic, and you can generate first line production from two groups. But like secretly, sneakily, that third line with Kyle Turris, and if Jesse Puljujarvi shows a pulse, that's really interesting as a third slash pseudo second line, because they can, like, there is a lot of built-in upside to that line.
Well, with Puljujarvi, obviously, we talk about X factors with the Canucks. Like, he is a enormous, enormous X factor for the Edmonton Oilers. You're right. That line, it could go one, it could go not one of two ways, but there's a big range of outcomes again for that line, because, you know, even Kyle Turris, I liked that pickup for the Oilers, but I think there's questions about how productive he's going to be for them. And then obviously with Puljujarvi, nobody really knows what to expect him going full time with the Oilers now. So that's the kind of line that could end up, you know, getting scrapped 2 weeks from now, or it could be a major strength of the Oilers all year if it really shows out.
We want to talk about X factors. Jesse Puljujarvi can certainly be one for the Edmonton Oilers. And we've been talking about this element to Elias Pettersson and just kind of being used as a matchup. And when you look at those lines, you know, Travis Green just kind of mentioned as well, just kind of matching up versus McDavid. I'm curious if this is an element we see tonight. This is another layer, another evolution to Elias Pettersson's game. We saw it obviously in the bubble. They treated it like an offseason, and here's something you can develop on your game. Pettersson goes head-to-head a lot more. Well, it's another offseason, and here they go into this upcoming year. Is this something we see full-blown a lot more often, with Elias Pettersson being used as a matchup role versus elite-level talent? Here's what Travis said today about Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser going up against McDavid.
They both progressed to the point now where they can do it. They showed it in the bubble, and when you play against Edmonton, though, it's a little bit different animal. When you're playing against McDavid and Draisaitl, it's two of the best in the league and in the world. So it's always a challenge when you play this team. But our guys are excited to play tonight.
That's Travis Green just talking about the potential matchup versus Connor McDavid. And to me, this is going to be the story into the game. I know there's people texting in about the goaltending and all that sort of stuff. That's fine. I'm excited to see if this is a role that gets dispatched for Elias Pettersson all season long. And going up against Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl is really exciting. I know some people would say, well, you're limiting his offensive potential. But Elias Pettersson, and you know, when that line is at its full, JT Miller and Brock Besser, they will be able to dominate possession. So I wouldn't be too worried about eliminating offensive opportunities, because they will control the puck on their own right. And they're so good at retrieving the puck and making sure that they aren't on the ice for high danger chances. So I'd be willing to trade that opportunity to say Pettersson versus McDavid. As much as you want to put him out there against Tyler Ennis and Kyle Turris and all that sort of stuff, if you can limit the potential of what those top two lines can do, I'll take that trade-off.
It'll be interesting also to see how the presence of Jake Virtanen on that line instead of JT Miller impacts Green's decision, whether he does go full-on matchup with Pettersson, even without JT Miller there to help out, to take draws, which we know,
well, speed,
you know, has
speed,
always been
right?
A big role. Yeah.
Speed versus speed can certainly play an element into that, and no one's ever disputed how fast Jake Virtanen can skate. So he's got that in his bag of tricks as well. So for the short term for two games, it's a fine deployment. And if there's an element where his speed needs to match up, if you had to pick someone from the Canucks to kind of be in a foot race with Connor McDavid, Jake Virtanen would be first or second in that conversation.
Yeah, but as you said, you know, look, it's not just about speed when you're matching up with McDavid. It helps, certainly, but you've got to have really good hockey sense, especially in your own zone. And, you know, you alluded to it, man, like the best way to keep Connor McDavid off the score sheet is to possess the puck in the Oilers zone. And Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser are really, really good at that, at holding the puck in the offensive zone. Jake Virtanen, I wouldn't necessarily call that a strength of his game, right? That is an area, even more than just strictly as a defensive player, but that's an area where I think that group will really miss JT Miller. Because again, the best thing you can do, if you can play a minute in Edmonton's zone before they get the puck off of you, well, it's going to be really hard for Connor McDavid to generate chances on that shift. And having JT Miller there would really help them with that cycle game, that possession game in the other team's zone. That's something Jake Virtanen's going to have to adapt to. You don't want to be trading rush chances with that line, right? And you know, Jake Virtanen has done a lot of his best work off the rush for the Canucks. Look, you don't want to put him in there and say, oh, okay, and by the way, you have to change your game. You have to go away from your strengths. You want to play, you want him to do what he can to be successful, what he's good at, but that does make me a little bit nervous, right? Just the way Jake Virtanen's presence changes how that line might operate. If you're using it to match up against McDavid, there's some liability there. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's a great point. As far as the term I've used is he's more direct, right?
Yep.
But look, it's not that he can't cycle. It's just his natural habit is to want to put the puck towards the net. And in a game like this, in a matchup role like this, it's a great point to illustrate that with JT Miller's exclusion, it means you just might see a bit more transferring of the puck between the teams, just because your natural inclination, or Jake's natural inclination, is to get puck on stick and get puck towards net. So that's an element that might create transition opportunities for the Edmonton Oilers. But by and large, I would say it's the problem is there's not a lot of other candidates to kind of put out there to swap with Virtanen. You could put Gaudette there. Probably not. You could put Zach McEwen. You could put, I guess, like maybe Roussel. It's you're shorthanded in that scenario.
No, Virtanen is the best person to sub in there. I do wonder if instead of the, you know, top line on top line matchup tonight, if we see Travis Green go back to using the Beagle, Mott, and Sutter trio as a hard matchup line with McDavid, and if he just says, look, it's not that Pettersson and Besser can't do the job, but just without JT Miller there, we need those guys to score. And, you know, if you have a line of Tyler Mott and Jay Beagle and Brandon Sutter, I mean, those guys are all in the lineup to play defense, basically, right? And to make life harder for the other team's best players. So you may as well use them at least a little bit in that role. You know, you're not going to use your third line in a defensive role. You know, Nils Höglander's on the second line, so you want to get them offensive opportunities. And just almost by process of elimination, when you look at the other three lines, I think that fourth line, at least tonight, at least until JT Miller is going to be back in the lineup, they're going to have to shoulder more of the matchup duties.
It's funny in a matchup versus Connor McDavid. You're right that they can transition between who's going to take on that role. It feels like the way NBA teams like want to guard LeBron James, you don't just need one guy to do it. You got to just throw four or five guys at him over the course of your bench and just say whoever's freshest, if you're somewhat able, just hound him and just kind of tire him out. And then fourth quarter, when it matters, then we'll put our main guy on him. And hopefully he's a bit fatigued. You're right in the element of if Pettersson's going to take on this role in the first and second periods, okay, maybe it's sparingly done. But Beagle and Horvat, just go out there, churn your legs, tire him out. And then come third period, here's our defensive stopper who can also create a lot of offense on his own right. Maybe that's the way you go about it.
And I think we'll see a lot of temporarily jumbled lines too, right? Where, okay, you know, Leon Draisaitl's out there for an offensive zone draw. We'll get Horvat and Pearson and Brandon Sutter will start this shift. And then when the puck gets out of the zone, Nils Höglander will hop on it. Or we'll see that with, you know, okay, Patterson and Besser are going to get out there with Tyler Mott to start it off. And then when they get going on offense, Jake Vertan will get out there. We'll see some of that, I expect, to kind of limit the opportunities for, you know, Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid and their lines to really exploit some of the weaker players on the Canucks.
Should we get wild with some predictions here?
Just for tonight?
Yeah, just for tonight's game. Actually, I guess we didn't do Stanley Cup predictions.
We did not. Do you want to go?
All right, first for tonight.
Oh man, it's one game. It's so hard to say. Oh, why not? I'll go Canucks 3-2.
I'll go Canucks 4-3. A bit of a higher scoring affair for me. 7 goals. That is, if you're looking at the totals somewhere else. And looking to make a wager. So I'll go 4-3 for the Vancouver Canucks. As far as the rest of the season, we made our predictions yesterday. I was so bold to say the Canucks will win the North Division, at least as far as in the playoffs. They will represent the Canadian Division. What are the rest of the matchups potentially look for you for Stanley Cup winners and, I guess, division winners as well?
Well, I'll stick with Stanley Cup winners. I'm all in on the Colorado Avalanche. I think that team is absolutely stacked.
Man, that's a trendy pick.
It is, but man, you look at that roster. It's absurd. Nathan MacKinnon is out of control. You know about the defense. You know about the other forwards. They're so good. I'll pick them to win. And it's funny because I've seen so many Stanley Cup predictions, and they've all been an Eastern team against a Western team. And it's kind of funny because that's not how it has to go this year. So I wish I could choose another Western based team for Colorado to defeat in the Stanley Cup final, just because there is an opportunity for that to happen this year. But I don't know. I'll say Washington gets back and loses to Colorado.
Clever. I will go with the Vegas Golden Knights winning the Stanley Cup versus the Tampa Bay Lightning.
New captain Mark Stone.
Yeah. And actually, yeah. 5-D-men, Vegas Golden Knights, too. This is interesting. Tonight that they're going with 13 forwards and 5-D-men. Good luck to them. I guess in theory.
It's an interesting one.
I'm just imagining a 5-on-3 penalty kill when two of your D-men are in. How just devastating that would be for the three guys rotating in and out. It's an interesting strategy. I'm not saying I would ever want to do this for a team, but I like an NHL team trying something.
Sure.
I do want to. I'm very intrigued to see how it goes.
My thing is, I can see how a 5-defenseman rotation would work. And you know, you think, okay, well, we're not going to give minutes to our worst defenseman, and we'll just do a rotation and get more minutes to our best players. I can understand that, but just the getting a 13th forward doesn't really do anything for you. It's like, okay, great, we have another forward who is worse than our 12th forward. That's not enough of a reward for pulling out the 6th defenseman for me. So I don't know. I kind of understand it, but not wouldn't be a long-term strategy for me.
Especially in a shortened season with a lot of games coming up. And they get going 2:30 Pittsburgh at Philadelphia. NHL season, it's on. And then 5:00, the Land Rover pregame show, Vancouver, Edmonton. Walker and Sal will have it. Batch and Hirsch at 7:00 for puck drop. Dan Riccio. Yeah, he's back after the one chip challenge. that was a lot of fun seeing that yesterday. But Dan Riccio on the way, plus Chris Johnson at 1:10 and Brendan Batchelor at 2:10 on Reach Deep, the People Show here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.